Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're having some fun here this week. The Orioles out on the West Coast. We got draft week, and of course, our 25th anniversary. The big celebration of the release of the documentary will happen at 5:08 p.m. on Thursday, the 25th, in anticipation of the NFL draft, and maybe the Ravens even dealing out of there and picking first on Friday. But Luke and I will be together on Friday at Fadley's. I'll be giving away the Pac-Man scratch-offs, courtesy of the Maryland Lottery, in conjunction with our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping our water clean, as well as Jiffy Lube Multicare. On Wednesday, I will be at Green Mountain Bowl, next to Green Mountain Station, talking not about bowling, but I'm going to be talking about bowling anyway. I like bowling, especially duck pins. Any joint with duck pins, I'm down with. People from out of town are like, what the hell is duck pins? Trust me on this. So I'll be there Wednesday, 2 to 4, and then at 4, we're going to watch the Orioles and the Angels. I will also have the Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away in beautiful Hampstead, Carroll County, Maryland. This guy's not in Carroll County, Maryland. I think he's out in the West Coast. I think he's in the Bay Area, but I'm not even sure. I know of him through a book he wrote several years ago where the Oakland A's were at the center of it. Dynastic, bombastic, fantastic. Reggie Raleigh, Catfish, and Charlie Finley swinging A's. And I've already had Susan Fornoff this week and admitted that that was the team I hated the most because they beat the Orioles in 73 and 74, made me cry when I was 5 and when I was 6. And then the Pirates happened and we won, and then it hasn't been good since 83, really. But this might be our time. We're talking a lot more baseball around here. Jason Turbo is not just the guy that wrote about the A's, but has written about baseball codes, unwritten rules, which – when you're right about the unwritten rules, I mean, no wonder he doesn't have a press credential. They bled blue the 81 Dodgers, which was a split season weird team we could talk about. He wrote a book called Still All Right. Kenny Loggins. I love Kenny Loggins for a lot of reasons, and I'll get to that. And most recently, Twin Cities, which was more of a serious thing. Life as a black cop and a championship coach with Charles Adams. We welcome our defending champion, Jason Turbo, back onto the program. Dude, I just called you because the A's are leaving Oakland, and I figured you were a guy that if I looked at you in your thing, you didn't want to put your camera on, that you'd have A's stuff on the wall out there. I think of you as associated with the A's. Am I wrong?
Well, I'm in the Bay Area, and I definitely took a deep dive on the A's when I was researching the book Dynastic, Bombastic, Fantastic. I got to travel the country and hang out with almost all of them, and in the process acquired a lot of kind of memorabilia along the way. I find it helps me in my process to be surrounded by the stuff I'm writing about. And some
of
it
has North Carolina sit with Catfish or something like that, or am I wrong?
Well, Catfish was long dead by the time I wrote this book.
Oh, okay, all right. I'm thinking somebody sat with Catfish for a book, and I've do so much. I'm like, I can't remember it all, but Catfish.
You got a lot in your head, and I'll tell you, you did that intro read so smoothly that I'm on the West Coast. You're right. I'm in Berkeley, California. I want to come out there to get that Pac-Man disc, the scratch offs. I'll this talk one, bowling. I'm in.
I've even learned how to do this. I've gotten creative with my logo to be able to Pac-Man it. So the A's, what is your thing with the A's, because you wrote this cool book. I mean, I had you on, we had a laugh about it. I think we were just doing radio then. It was a couple years ago, maybe pre-plaguey at that time. And look, I've been going to Oakland forever. I've seen baseball games. One of my favorite baseball games I ever saw was there. I was there for the crotch chop game in Tejada, and when they carried Johnny Damon off on a cart, I was at that game. Playoff game, one of the best baseball games I ever saw in a lifetime of seeing baseball. I was there when the AFC Championship game was presented, or trophy was presented to Art Modell in the black hole with Trent Dilfer and Goose and all those guys. So, I mean, I've had moments there. And I guess I knew it was untenable. It's been untenable forever. But I just sort of figured when I went over and saw the little lake there, I'm like, they're going to like figure this out and keep the baseball team, because they've already lost the football team. They've lost the basketball team. Where else is the baseball team going to go?
Well, apparently Las Vegas. It's untenable because the team has made it untenable. Let's just be clear about that. There's a small but very vibrant fan base in Oakland that is looking for a better Coliseum experience than the one they currently have. Like, a ballpark is attainable. Current leadership has been next to impossible to work with as far as the city of Oakland goes, who more or less bent over backwards to accommodate them. And finally, John Fisher, who is no hyperbole, the most hated man in Northern California right now, is just ready to take off.
Well, that was the whole purpose, right? Like, I got into this with Susan Farnoff earlier. She's like, you don't know bad ownership till you know this guy. And I'm like, I had Angelos here 30 years. And it wasn't that Angelos wanted to move the team. He just wanted to bilk it. He just wanted to make as much money as possible off of it the last 20 years in Masson that nobody was happy. That's a different kind of unhappy than absolutely trying to move the team and making no bones about it, right?
Sure. Well, and then Fisher has the Angelos bases covered also. I mean, he fielded the smallest payroll in baseball for many, many years and jettisoned guys as soon as they had the chance of reaching a payday. So the product continually suffered. And so the fans began to stay away. And the Coliseum is decrepit and there's very little upgrade to it. And so his response is to A, build the city of Oakland, give me everything I want, and including $1 billion worth of infrastructure improvements. And when I don't get it, I'm just going to leave. From what I understand, you know, they were well underway on a property in Jack London Square, kind of along San Francisco Bay, along the harbor. And the contractors involved just had such a difficult time with A's ownership that many of them hesitated, and they hesitated enough to make the deal untenable. It's all just a really sad story.
Well, to say that you're going to be a partner or a good partner or a lord over all of it. I mean, we dealt with that with John Angelos here last year, not signing a lease that gave him $600 million worth of money and then really using it as a leverage point to sell the team for more money, right? So he just literally that was the shell game played here on the exit after leaving 30 years of literal feces, you know, along Camden Yards. Left the team in good shape. I keep saying that, and we'll get to on the field here and all the dreams of how it gets rebuilt. But I saw enough life in Oakland to think like, and it's such a big area of people that the Giants have never sort of wanted them around from the beginning. Angelos even said to me the one time I sat with him, if we have a team in D.C., it'll be the same situation they have in the Bay Area, or they won't be. And this is when Candlestick was still standing, by the way, like literally, that how much has changed in 30 years. But it never changed for the A's, right? It just never, like, the same stadium Reggie Jackson was in minus Mount Davis is still, like, there. It never got better. In the mind of this guy, this Sacramento Las Vegas thing, I'm trying to figure the exit strategy of all of this and how it really benefits a guy that probably could have stayed there in a bigger market and fought it out with an existing fan base and not going to a place that has a football team and a hockey team that's fighting for money.
For sure. I mean, that's the head scratcher for everybody around here. What is the benefit to moving to Las Vegas, which appears not to want the A's in any more than Fisher wants to stay in Oakland? You know, the teachers union is fighting them hand and foot, which is, you know, in my mind, great. And not just from an A standpoint, but from like, why does any town let a professional sports team built them out of millions of dollars? None of the locals, you know, everyone I know who has gone to Vegas has talked to locals. Like, what do you think about the A's moving here? Nobody cares.
I ran into Joe Ortiz at the owners' meetings a couple weeks ago. I'm like, the Chargers, you have room for fans, right? Like, nobody in L.A. wanted the Chargers. Like, they just showed up, and now they're trying to, you know, they're on their way to Frankfurt or wherever they'll wind up putting them, because I don't think that can ever. I mean, you look at these things and say, that's dumb. What are you doing? And it's about, well, we get automatic revenue. I mean, that's the game, I guess, to some degree, but this A's thing, can you explain it in any, is there anything rational about it?
No, there's nothing rational. And the game in baseball today is a real estate game. You acquire real estate, you have a ballpark as your central tenant, you own all the properties around it, and you become a real estate magnet. And it doesn't matter if you sell tickets or not, because you're making money on all this property. The A's aren't even getting that in Las Vegas. It doesn't make any sense why they're moving.
Jason Turbo is here. He writes books on things. What moves you to write a book on the A's? Like, give me the genesis of all that, living in the Bay Area. And I guess on the back end, I mean, gosh, the most famous baseball book of this century is written about the A's, right? It's Moneyball, right? Like, so, I mean, it begat movies. It begat a movement. It begat everything about spin rate and launch angle that we see here and leaning into walks and all of that stuff. But that's a generation ago now as well. I mean, gosh, I started talking about Charlie Finley and the A's that you wrote about back in the day. That was my first entree to loving baseball, and really Susan Fornoff even brought up like the orange glowing baseball in a segment a little while ago. So the ghost of Charlie Finley chases us all, including when I saw Vida Blue on the front of your website a minute ago.
Here's an orange baseball for you.
Hey, look at you. See, I
Charlie
knew you
Finley
were cool.
Model. Absolutely.
You wonder why I want you on the show, Turbo. Come on, man. You're a real expert.
I do what I can. Yeah, I mean, this is a great, not only a great team, but a great story. Let's be honest. This is one of, if not the most lively team in big league history. And you say they made you cry as a kid. They made each other cry. There were fist fights in this clubhouse regularly and repeatedly. And having talked to all the players on this team, it became clear that that was the secret sauce. That's what fueled them. In addition to being very talented, they kept each other so on the edge at all times and so accountable that it drove them in ways that other championship caliber teams couldn't match. And the only thing that kept it from flying out of control was the fact that as much as they hated each other, they hated the owner even more. They had that in common. Everybody loathed Charlie Finley, and that helped cohese them.
Well, Charlie fought with, like, Angelos, like Al Davis. He literally was the guy who fought with everyone, right? Literally.
He was. He fought with everybody in his organization. He fought with everybody within Major League Baseball. I mean, he was a one-man operation. When the A's won the 1974 World Series, their third straight championship, there was a seven-man front office, which included a ticket manager, which included a comptroller. Charlie Finley was a one-man operation almost literally because he couldn't take input from anybody else. He had to call all the shots. And that was ultimately the downfall of the A's, because if there was a logjam with Finley, he had a heart attack that year. And so nothing moved, right? Until he got better and could get it moving along. There was nobody to step in.
Man, you are the historian on the first villain, the first James Bond villain of my sports childhood, Charles O. Finley. My dad hated Charlie Finley, man. Talk bad about him, around a kitchen table. That's the way I grew up, 74, 75, 76. It'll all be documented in our 25th anniversary documentary that comes out on Thursday night. I got to looking at all of, old memories. I even mentioned when Reggie Jackson cursed at me in Memorial Stadium when I was a Cub reporter. But he was an angel then. He wasn't even an Oakland A, but the Bash brothers and steroids and the beginning of the Billy Martin wearing out pitchers during that era. I mean, the Oakland A's have this really wildly rich history of winning, losing, always being a little bit of the stepchild in that community there with the Giants having Mays and McCovey. But they didn't win. Those Giants teams didn't win. The A's won.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the Giants had some of the all-time best teams in the 60s, but the Dodgers were always better. And yeah, the A's are the stepchild in the Bay Area because the Giants were here first. That's them first and foremost. But then Charlie Finley came along, and when he should have been trying hardest to woo the local press, especially the San Francisco Chronicle, he pulled funding. Like, he stopped paying for their reporters to go on the road. Even while the Giants were slavishing expense accounts on the Chronicle reporters. So it's no wonder that he got terrible press, because he treated the press terribly. Even when it became standard for teams not to pay the freight, he wouldn't even make the hotel reservations. And then he started promising. There was one time he promised fresh lobsters, 50 fresh lobsters in the press dining room to the first 50 guys who got them. And the reporters were like, all right, we're on it. But, they're on the field interviewing players, so they can't be there first, but a couple of them even left early, never any lobsters available. They finally figured out, Finley was feeding his friends and family before they even unlocked the doors, and the lobsters were gone before any of the press ever had a chance. And my takeaway from that is not that, okay, who cares? He didn't feed lobster to the press.
I don't know that I've eaten meals in that room with the, like, under... I've eaten a lot of meals. I wouldn't trust a lobster down there. Me.
Well, that's a good point. The real problem was that he made these promises to the reporters. He set some expectations. He never had any notion of fulfilling them. Right?
And I guess my point is, 50 years later, it hasn't changed. And that is, why do we love sports so much, Jason Turbo? Let's talk about Kenny Loggins. He makes me happier than that,
Yeah, well, I mean, sports is maddening. We get wrapped up in the personas of our teams. It's why you're so happy to cheer on Gunnar Henderson right now. You know, like the Rutschman and Westberg. You got a great, fun team to cheer on. And it makes you
finally
happy.
I've waited my whole life, you know.
I'm assuming it makes you happy. It better make you happy.
Are you an A's fan at heart?
I'm a lifelong Giants fan. I grew up on the
Giants
peninsula.
Giants fan. Yeah, I see both behind you, but you're a Giants guy. Okay,
I'm a Giants guy. You know, I like the A's, and I love the A's history. I'm deep into it. Certainly nothing but love for the A's, but when I'm rooting for a team, it's the Giants.
But you're not a guy like rooting for them to leave at all, which like in Baltimore and D.C., we wouldn't want anything good to happen to anybody in Philadelphia or D.C., certainly not the former Redskins team that, kept the Colts, or Colts fans at bay here for all the years of my childhood. Like there's a real anti thing. And the 49ers and the Raiders sort of always hated each other, right? Like that was that's more of a famous sort of one or the other kind of thing in your area.
Yeah. I got to say it's more like a big brother, little brother thing. You know, as a Giants fan, all Giants fans hate the Dodgers. But, my whole family's from L.A. And all those years the Dodgers were winning and the Giants weren't, the L.A. people didn't even really notice. I feel like it's the same way with the Giants and the A's. A lot of A's fans really are antagonistic about the Giants. And it's not the inverse as well. Like the Giants fans mostly, for the most part, like the A's. And because they're likable, until recently.
Well, you're writing some other books here. You wrote some serious stuff. Let's talk about that because, I went to look you up, and I love authors. I'm one of them myself. Crazy, deranged. We're all a little Jack Torrance in us. All work and no play at the typewriter. Going.
You have
on.
An axe near you.
Yeah, but when you sign up to do a book and you take it on, there has to be, it's a passion project, even for getting paid to do it and taking a deep dive because you really want to do it well. You want to make it readable. You took on a different kind of project during the plague, right?
Yeah. My most recent book is with a Minneapolis high school football coach in the poorest school in the entire state, North Community High School in inner city Minneapolis. It was his alma mater. He took over a team that had been winless for years and brought them to a state championship in a very short amount of time, while concurrently being a black police officer in the Minneapolis PD during the time of George Floyd. The guy came up with Derek Chauvin. He had a lot of thoughts. And the idea of earning your place in a community, the community where you're from, and having people turn their back on you because of the uniform you wear, based on nothing you've done personally, was wrenching for him. And it makes for a really compelling story.
Well, we're in Baltimore and Freddie Gray, begat that and The Wire and all of that. So it's an American story, right? It's an urban American story in a lot of ways with race and football and crime and perception and racism. And trying to figure out how we move forward. So I'll look forward to that. Anything on Kenny Loggins, dude, you can't tell me you write a Kenny Loggins book. A lot of people don't know this. You don't know this because we never even met, but I've been doing this a long time. I was a music critic in the late 80s, sort of the almost famous Cameron Crowe. If you go down that line, I really did live that life on a bus and know a lot of rock stars and see a lot of things that I didn't write about and partook in some things and some other things I did not partake in during that period of time. But I was young and dumb and all of that is there. And I say this every day because I've known for sports. My last name's Aparicio. It's all I've done. I've had a sports radio station, sports, sports, sports. Anybody knows me knows how much I love music. I mean, ran off to see Springsteen the other night. All the narrators of my 25th anniversary documentary are all the local musicians. Gina Shock from the Go-Go's, Mike Brillhart from 100.7, who I grew up with, John Allen, one of my best friends from Seven Horses. So like music to me, I'm 55. I've loved sports forever. I've been in sports forever. But music is the escape for me. It's the thing that, other than a couple of bad interviews with some musicians that may have been jerks along the line, I have so many more stories of what beautiful guys the guys in ZZ Top were and sitting backstage when I was a kid with different people and talking to them. But I love music. So if I were to write about things or to be involved in something that might be fun for me, writing books about musicians, am I wrong? Was it fun? Was Kenny Loggins awesome?
Of course it was fun. Of course Kenny's awesome. Like I'm 50, I'm 54. So like you, I grew up as a teenager in the 80s with Danger Zone and Footloose, which you know, was not really my jam as a young teenager.
What did you listen to? What was your music in 80, 81, 82?
I'm not proud of it. Don't get me wrong. I was listening to crappy hair metal, but
you want me to let my hair down? I invited Dee Snider on the show this morning and was turned down because M3's next weekend. So, like, trust me.
Why is Dee Snider going to hi-hat you?
Big league me. I don't know. I think he'll come on. I think it was a form letter. I think Dee's going to come on. I do. I really do.
I hope you get it.
I'm holding it.
Point being, I got to talk to Kenny for many, many, many hours and realized not only how deep his career was beforehand, and I knew the broad strokes of Loggins and Messina, but really the unbelievable attention he gave to songcrafting, especially early in his solo career before he became, you know, the chart-topping machine, when he really could, like, try and play with the nuance as opposed to crafting hit singles. Like, he really put a lot into his music, and I appreciate that.
Conviction of the Heart may be one of the greatest songs ever written. I want to say that out loud on the show because I don't get to talk about Kenny Loggins much, even though my band did do Footloose back in the day because we had an 80s cover band. You know, I collect late 70s Pacifica belt buckles. It's like sort of my weird passion to have Kiss belt buckles. And I just picked up a David Bowie that had been eluding me for a long time. Still in the market for the Rainbow and the Blues Brothers and the UFO, but I'll get those. Amari Brown's going to be on later. When I find that UFO belt buckle, he's going to want it from me. So I'm going to talk some baseball with, you know, everybody that's covering it, because this A's thing, they're coming to town this weekend, Jason. And I'm trying to put this into perspective for myself, having spent a lot of time out there and gone to games, as to what the hell it is. And I guess more than anything, with our baseball situation here, just to say Major League Baseball should be handling all of their business better than they have over the last 50 years in regard to, and I've said this out loud, if the A's were owned by Marriott, they would pull the Marriott sign off the front of the door and say, you're not of the standard to be a Marriott. And that goes for the Chicago White Sox as well this year, to say, you can't wear the shield. You can't have the Major League Baseball logo on there if you're not going to field a Major League Baseball team.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I will say, for those going to games this weekend in Baltimore, the A's, after a very rough start, have been surprisingly fun. They're actually a game and a half up on the Astros in the AL West.
Well, I saw the Astros act the other day in D.C., yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, which is saying something. But, yeah, they're not a good team, but they can be very fun. They have some very fun young players that are worth going out to watch.
What's your next book, man?
My next book is even further from baseball. It's on medical aid and dying, especially in California, which is an interesting movement based on a book I was writing with my father, who was an oncologist, before he passed away, actually using medical aid and dying at the end of a battle with leukemia. So it's a topic.
My heart to you, my friend. My wife is a 2-time leukemia survivor. She's had 2 bone marrow transplants, a man in Germany. It's all in the documentary. It'll be in there. But hey, man, hats off to you, right? I see Kenny Loggins with the hat. I now want to, like, dive into the Kenny Loggins thing, because, like, that is something that would be a breezy read on a beach in Jamaica or Tampa or something like that. You know,
that's exactly right.
I would be down with it. Listen, when it comes to pleasure reading, I have 2 books in front of Kenny Loggins. You ready? Geddy
ready.
Lee. I saw Geddy do the thing 3 times because I'm a Geddy guy. I was there in Toronto when Alex came on and did all of that. So I'm down with that. And then I had Rick Emmett on the show from Triumph. I had him on maybe 2 months ago, and he was just such a beautiful guy and a big, big baseball fan. His brother's dying request was to have his ashes spread at shortstop on 33rd Street in Baltimore because he loved Cal that much. And he couldn't pull that off. But I said, I know people. I know the guy. I know John Hoey over here at the Y, which is where the land is now. So, like, you learn things that, you know, it's all true. Rappers want to be athletes and athletes want to be rappers, right?
Absolutely. And if you can find the musicians who love baseball, then you've got a lot of faces covered.
Oh man, Jack McDowell and I would get after it all the time about rock and roll, and Bernie Williams playing the guitar. And so, yeah, I you know, music keeps me. One year I'm going to come out to that thing they do in Arizona, at spring training, where they put the whole baseball rock and roll thing together with Gammons, right, and all those guys. That would Pearl Jam. Yeah, that'll do it for me. Hey, man,
real quick, you might enjoy this. On Saturday night, I was at a punk rock show in Oakland. One of the bands is a band from Tijuana, Mexico, called DFMK. They're great. They're Mexican punk rock. One of their T-shirts, green and gold, with their name on the front, on the back is the number 24. The nameplate, it says Baseball Punks, P-U-N-X. And at the bottom, it says F John Fisher, sell the team, except the full word, not F. And I'm like, I got to talk to these guys. Huge baseball fans, huge Padre fans. We ended up talking for like a half hour, had drinks together. It's fantastic.
Baseball brings people together. Absolutely. Baseball brings people together. It brought us together, for crying out loud. Hey, sure. Man, crab cake on me when you get in here. And you are still in the Bay Area. Which side are you on out there?
I live in the East Bay in Berkeley.
You live in Berkeley. So I've never been to Berkeley. I invited Silver on this week. He's going to come in. He's something. It's draft week, man. I can't come on this week. We'll come on later. All right.
He's talking to Snyder.
Yeah, I'll get D's. Don't tell Silver that. I love Silver. But for the first time in my life, the week of the championship games when the 49ers hosted, one of my best friends and former bosses runs the game, the radio station out in San Francisco. Sure. And I have dear friends, Julio Bermejo, one of my dearest friends in the world at Tommy's Mexican Restaurant in Geary in the Richmond District. So I came out, I went to Tahoe, and I had never been to Sacramento. I had never driven in that way. I mean, I've been to the Bay Area. I probably spent 60 nights of my life in the Bay Area, but I'd never driven in from that part of the world. Mm-hmm. And I came through Berkeley driving, and I almost like just wanted to get off and walk around. I still have never been to Berkeley. So it's like one of those places in my life that I know I'm going to have a great time there because everybody there is cool, right?
Well, everybody here has their issues, just like everybody else. You know, we've got, speaking as a card-carrying liberal, we've got crazy liberals here that also make life crazy. But when you come to Berkeley, happy to give you a tour around.
I never say no to the Bay Area. I left my heart, you know, in San Francisco. So, and apparently the Oakland A's are going to maybe leave their jerseys or their sweaters or the ghost of Dave Kingman's rat. I'm not sure. But either way, the Oakland A's will be here this weekend. We're going to be down at Fadley's with our friends, the Maryland Lottery, giving away the Pac-Man scratch-offs. I got to get some shrimp salad. I got to get some crab cakes. I got to get some mac and cheese. Luke Jones is going to join us from 2 until 3. I'm going to be like hanging out from 3 until 5. We're doing live radio. I don't know why. It just brings on stress that I don't need at this point in my life. Luke's going to be covering the draft. If you're on the tech service, you'll get all of that first. I'm going to be at Greenmount Bowl from 2 until 4 on Wednesday doing the show, talking about horse racing, a lot about horse racing in the new Pimlico, and all sorts of things that I'm learning about the horse racing thing. And then we're going to settle in and watch the Angels and Mike Trout and watch the Orioles mow down the Angels and mow down the Athletics and get ready for the big bad New York Yankees on Monday down at Camden Yards. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions making our water clean, getting us out on the road in the Maryland Crab Cake Tour in conjunction with our friends at Jiffy Lube Multi Care as well. 25th anniversary documentary comes out on Thursday. I make no excuses for how many of you and celebrities and fun and weird stuff and funny stuff and me running through the streets in my underwear and hanging out with rock stars and I don't know. There's all sorts. I'm doing final edits and I realized like Stacey Keibler was my intern and I haven't even pointed that out. So there's things I got to get back in. When the New Kids on the Block fans all picketed the newspaper, I got to get all this stuff in there. So the countdown begins. Follow along at baltimorepositive.com. Stay with us.